Solo. The Carolina Panthers put out a graphic yesterday that surely upset a lot of people, asking fans to select who the greatest player in franchise history was, with Luke Kuechly, Julius Peppers, and Steve Smith as the only three players featured, which means they failed to include Cam Newton. To me, it's no debate. Cam is the greatest Panther ever because no other player had the influence that he did. When I have the LeBron James versus Michael Jordan conversation, I don't like doing who would win one-on-one, because that's a question you can't really answer. But you can monitor influence. How much your presence in that sport impacted others. How big you were to the culture. These are all things you can chart, you can monitor, and that's why I think it's unrealistic for LeBron to become the greatest over Michael Jordan. And it's also why I think Cam is the greatest Carolina Panther. He played the most important position in professional sports. That brings a different level of notoriety. However, I don't remember Jake DeLome being on GQ covers. That was Cam. I don't remember Kerry Collins appearing on game shows. That was Cam. I don't remember, you fill in the blank, the rest of the guys, a Jimmy Clausen or a Chris Winkie, a Steve Berline. I don't remember them getting their own Nickelodeon shows. That, again, was Cam. He was polarizing because he shaped culture. Dabbing wasn't a thing nationally until Cam started doing it in the NFL. The dancing in the end zone, his fashion. That's why national talk show hosts led with the Panthers. He made Carolina Panthers football relevant in a way it's never been relevant before. He carried the franchise to its most successful season ever. 15-1, going to the Super Bowl, and neither Steve Smith nor Julius Peppers were on that team. He was an MVP. Only Luke Kuechly can say that as a defensive player of the year, in this organization at least. His most talented wide receiver that year was Jericho Cotchery. Or maybe it was rookie Devin Funchess, or maybe it was Ted Ginn Jr. We thought it was Kelvin Benjamin. Panther fans were punting the year when he tore his ACL in training camp. The stats, they certainly back up Cam being the greatest Panther ever. All the passing records. Third in franchise history in rushing. The most rushing touchdowns in Panthers history. And unlike Peppers or Smith or Kuechly, as much as I love those guys and I don't want to slander them, Cam can say he was the greatest in NFL history at something. He is the greatest red zone threat we've ever seen in the sport. We've never seen a quarterback with the same build as Cam played the way that Cam was operated with inside the 20s. Jumping over the pile in the first game he played. We've never seen anything like that before. So decades from now, when we think back on this last decade of Panthers football, which included some of Peppers, some of Smith, a lot of Kuechly, the first name we're going to go back on is Cam, because he was the quarterback. He's the one that has all these records. He's the one that carried the most influence. He was the polarizing one. He's the greatest Panther. You could tweet the show at SportsHubTriad if you'd like. 336-777-1600. Who do you view to be the greatest Carolina Panther of all time? Michael and Clemens has an opinion on this. Michael, you're on SportsHubTriad. What do you think?
Josh, Cam is no doubt the best Panther of all time. He led the Panthers to a Super Bowl. If it wasn't for him, they wouldn't have been there. And when Cam doesn't play well, they blame him. But he has to get the credit for what he did for the franchise. to taking them to their only Super Bowl appearance. He is the best, hands down.
I agree with you. Thanks for the call. Obviously, I agree with you. To the people that dislike Cam, I'm specifically talking to Panther fans right now. If not Cam, why? Like, I just spelled out this entire argument. Michael said, yeah, he was the best player on the best team the Panthers have had that didn't feature two guys who we expect to be in the Hall of Fame one day. I mean, you can go, hey, was he better at his position than Smitty and Peppers were? And I could realistically hear that argument, but how are you going to compare that to the impact a quarterback can have? It's kind of like trying to say that Jerry Rice is a better San Francisco 49er than Joe Montana was. Was Jerry Rice better at his position? Yeah. Joe Montana's the greatest Niner because his position carried more influence. His position was directly translated to the overall success of that organization. A lot of headlines today. You got the brand new Duke's Mayo Bowl. I'm not a big mayo fan. In fact, I hate mayo, but I like the Duke's Mayo Bowl name. It's perfect for Southern cuisine. It kind of makes sense. I think it's a good bowl name if you can guess relatively where the bowl game is played because of it. Like, Belk, okay, if you're from around this area, you understand where Belk is at. Pretty good name. When I think of what makes the South special, I think of cuisine. I think of Southern cuisine. And a lot of the best dishes you can have in Southern cuisine feature mayonnaise. Whether it's the tomato sandwich that Luke Kuechly ate in the video that the Duke's Mayo Bowl published today. Deviled eggs, potato salad, pimento cheese, coleslaw. I'm not a fan of a lot of those things, but I understand that's major. Those are major Southern dishes that I do not want to slander right now. Let's go to Kevin in Burlington, who wants in on the greatest Panthers and maybe even mayonnaise as well, because that's where we're at in the middle of July. What do you have for me, Kevin?
Oh, it's Duke's mayonnaise all day long, and yeah, I'm a mayonnaise fan. Yep. I used to eat mayonnaise sandwiches as a kid, okay? Just mayonnaise.
I had mustard sandwiches as a kid, so I can't really knock it.
Right. All right. And look, let's do it like this. I think Julius Peppers, I think it's, you can't argue, he's first ballot Hall of Famer. Steve Smith, I think you can make the argument for first ballot. Is Cam Newton even going to make the Hall of Fame? We know he's not a first ballot. I mean, you can't say he's going. I don't even think he's going to make the Hall of Fame. So it's either Julius Peppers or Steve Smith. And I don't really see how you can go Cam Newton because, hey, Steve Smith was a great wide receiver with or without Cam Newton. I'm not so sure Cam Newton was a great quarterback without Steve Smith.
I think – oh, thanks for the call. I would respond to that with he had his MVP season without Steve Smith. Steve wasn't on the team when they went to the Super Bowl in 2015. And neither was Kelvin Benjamin, or he was on the team, but he was injured that year. Is Cam a first ballot Hall of Famer? Is he a Hall of Famer at all? Probably not. But I don't think it's fair to close the book on Cam's career yet when I think there's still a lot of football left. Just like there was for Randall Cunningham, who he's often compared to. He had that second stage with the Vikings. Just like Michael Vick, who had that second stage with the Eagles. So I think it's too early to judge that on Cam. As for Luke Kuechly, that's really tough for me. Is Pat Willis a Hall of Famer? Is Luke Kuechly a Hall of Famer? I don't know the answer to that.
We also had another caller from here in Burlington call in to remind you or the other caller, I don't think you forgot, but Cam Newton is not the only quarterback to ever lead the Panthers to a Super Bowl. There's also a guy named Jake DeLome.
Yes.
I think that's obvious. But
yeah, Jake DeLome, friend of the show. I get he led the Panthers to the Super Bowl, but I believe more directly responsible for that might have been Stephen Davis, Deshaun Foster. That was not a pass-heavy team. Jake DeLome wasn't the starter at the start of that year. It was, of course, Rodney Pete.
But in talking about him, I wonder if we dropped the ball not making it the Bojangles Bowl.
That was discussed. I think that was the most popular pick for people in the South, thinking, hey, maybe Bojangles can take that over. But
in the alliteration.
It just didn't happen.
Yeah.
We have the Duke's Mayo Bowl, and I'm perfectly fine with it. I have this poll question up at Josh Graham Radio at Sports Hub Triad. Do you like mayonnaise? That's simple. 60% of the voting audience says yes, they like mayo. I want to transition things to Rashad McCants, because Rashad McCants reportedly delivered a letter to the North Carolina basketball office the day before they competed in the ACC tournament in Greensboro, and some thought that the letter was McCants apologizing for what he said 6 years ago. Sports Illustrated was the first one to get to this. Sports Illustrated's Kiara Luck had McCants on earlier today talking about that letter he delivered. And I think it's okay, if you're a Tar Heel fan, to be skeptical about his sincerity. I certainly am. I certainly was going into listening to this 40-minute conversation, and it didn't get a lot better when he got to this part as to why he delivered the letter.
On anybody to misconstrue what an apology is compared to asking for forgiveness. And so there wasn't no, you know, oh, I want you guys, I'm going to apologize, I'm sorry. No, it was, listen, I forgive y'all for what y'all did. And I want you to forgive me for what I did. Now, do the fans need to know what they did to me? No. They don't. Do the fans know what I did to the program? Yeah. Everybody know. The world know. But I'm willing to erase all that and not even go down that road and just say, man, look, I forgive y'all. I hope y'all forgive me, but I'm going to move forward. I'm going to clear my space in my heart and in my head. And I know that I need this energy moving forward in my life to be successful in business, to have different relationships with people, but beyond basketball. And I wanted to clear that because I know that a lot of people have real strong ties with Carolina.
He started in a place of semantics. Don't misconstrue the difference between apologizing and asking for forgiveness. Robert, what is the difference between those two? I honestly don't know. See if you can find whatever difference there is. I think it's really just a conversation of semantics there. He wouldn't say he's apologizing, instead asking for forgiveness. And before he said he was sorry for what he did, or he's asking for forgiveness for the things he did, he made sure to say that he forgave North Carolina for what they did, as if North Carolina feels like they need to be forgiven. His reasoning for the letter, it just sounded questionable to me. It sounds like his business has been hurt because of the way he attacked Roy Williams and Tar Heel basketball 6 years ago, saying that Roy had to know about the fake classes, that he was essentially told to just show up and play. He said at the very end of that clip you just heard, oh, I learned there's a lot of people that care a lot about Carolina, and he wants to move forward with his business opportunities. When he was talking about 14, this was the closest he came to feeling regretful about going to Outside the Lines and blowing this entire thing up.
I needed to have everyone understand why I was upset, why I was mad, and why this wasn't a fit for what was going on. And like you say, I might have went about it the wrong way. But that's the only way I knew at the time that would get the attention, that would make sure the NCAA heard me, and UNC heard me, ESPN heard me, CNN heard me, everybody heard. And I did all those interviews, but it was one of the things where I didn't want to push the universe, or not the universe, I didn't want to push the basketball program into turmoil, but I knew I needed to use them as an example.
I listened to him for 40 minutes. It didn't sound like he has spoken with Roy Williams, and I take issue with somebody who genuinely cares about the basketball program at North Carolina going to Outside the Lines, because as he just admitted, I think right there, oh, If I didn't do it that way, the NCAA and CNN and all of these wouldn't have heard what I had to say. He wanted to make it all public, and then he conveniently wrote a book in 2018. I'd be interested to see what the letter has to say, but if it sounded a lot like what I heard from McCants in this SI interview, I question the sincerity of it.
Ding, ding, boys. School's in session.
Let's go, man.
Back to The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
Our next guest was selected in the fifth round of the NFL draft a few months ago by the Denver Broncos. It's former Wake linebacker Justin Sternad, friend of the program, fan of sports radio, overall fan of sports as well. So this is the piece I'm interested in, getting to know you the last few years, Justin. What is it like when you get the call, when you get drafted in the fifth round, and it's one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history on the other end, Broncos GM John Elway?
Yeah, it was a pretty surreal moment, obviously, to be with my family and friends, my close friends and family. I mean, it was one of the greatest days of my life and something I'll always remember. But, like, to get that call, like, obviously, growing up, I wasn't, like, that's, like, more of my dad and everybody else who's, like, they're all crazy about John Elway. And, obviously, he's a legend of the game and a Hall of Famer. And just to have that call, obviously, from someone like that, and just to have the opportunity to go play for an organization like the Denver Broncos, who, would have, from what I've seen in the last couple of months, it seems like they treat their players very well, and it's something I'm really looking forward to.
Okay, so with everything being virtual this offseason, I start thinking about guys like you who get drafted, who try to set themselves apart from other players on the roster. You're trying to prove that you belong in the league, and you're not able to do so with an OTAs, hopefully training camp, fingers crossed, is supposed to go on scot-free or go on without a glitch. So when you're a draft pick and you're going through these virtual meetings, how have you tried to impress coaches during this offseason?
Yeah, so for 4 days during the week, we do Zoom meetings, which it's 5 hours a day. So that's been going on for about 2 months now. And what I've done really is just, with the team sends us an iPad with all the film breakdown of like the previous season and all the calls and things like that, and our coaches go through it with us. But really, just taking the time outside of those meetings to like get a little studying in, and now today was like the last day of our meeting. So what I'm going to do is kind of go back over everything, start from ground zero, and kind of go through the base calls. Like I'm going to OTAs basically, and like I'm just going to be going through the base calls that we'd be running, because really, if you can get down the base stuff, like, as you go into a season with the coordinators that I've had, and what it seems like they just kind of combine base calls and make those into one call or make it game plan specific during the season.
Pre-draft, this is what impressed the Broncos the most, wasn't it? Like when I think about guys who get picked in the middle rounds, they want players who are going to be mentally prepared, who mentally translate well. Was that something that the Broncos specifically liked about you?
I mean, I did get a chance to meet with them at the combine, so I got to meet Coach Fangio, who's a big defensive mind, and a lot of the people in the organization. And I actually got up on the board with him and kind of wrote, drew up a couple defenses, and he was able to talk to me about them, and not just what the linebacker does, but what the entire defense does. And that's something that I think I've been fortunate enough to learn through the coaches that I've had and the players I've played with. And it's something that obviously I'm going to need now, because a 3-4 defense is I haven't played in a 3-4 defense since my entire time playing football. So it's a little bit different, just the verbiage and getting lined up and things like that. And it's just a challenge that I'm looking forward to.
It is former Wake Forest linebacker Justin Sternad with us, draft pick of the Denver Broncos. Have you had a chance to pick the brain of your fellow linebacker mate, Von Miller?
So I haven't got to talk too much football with Von, but Von did reach out to me on draft day and told me how he's excited to get to work with me, and I let him know a couple days after that. I actually was on social media. I had some people sending me a post he had where he was saying he might switch back to his 40 days, and I text him. I go, are you really switching back to 40? Because if so, I got to tell all my family and friends to stop buying these jerseys, because I picked that number. And he got back to me and he was like, no, I'm just messing with people.
Okay. In that spot, though, how much did you have to play it cool a bit? Because I know you, right when you were arriving at Wake Forest, you probably watched as Von Miller ruined the Carolina Panthers Super Bowl in Super Bowl 50. This is one of the best defensive players in the sport the last decade, and now he's your teammate. So when he calls you, he reaches out to you. Are you kind of gushing a bit, or are you trying to play it cool?
I mean, a little bit of both. Obviously, like I always tell my friends and stuff, like when you get to like a point where you're actually in the NFL and things like that or whatever, like even in college ball, like it's still cool to meet those people. Like say I'm at the combine like this year and I was talking to like Chase Young. Yeah, we are both like just college athletes and stuff, but obviously he's had a great college career and is a great player. So it's still cool to meet those type of people. And it's the same thing that goes for like Vaughn. Like it's going to be awesome to be in meetings with him and be with somebody that I've literally been watching for a decade and plus now, and just know that he's probably going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, and be able to learn from him and what he does on and off the field to be successful is going to be really cool.
I got two housekeeping notes for you, Justin, before I let you go, because I know you're busy. When are you hoping to get started and get settled in Colorado?
I'm thinking mid-July is when I'll probably head out there, looking to obviously just be ready for training camp, and if we have anything, maybe prior to a little OTA, like 3-day OTA or something like that.
Yeah,
being ready to go out there and be ready.
Yeah, make sure you visit 16th Street Mall. That's a lot of fun in downtown Denver. I got to ask you this, though. So Wake Forest, they're going to compete in the first ever Duke's Mayo Classic, which is Notre Dame facing Wake Forest. The bowl game that you played Texas A&M in, the Belk Bowl, has been renamed. It's no longer the Belk Bowl. It's going to be the Duke's Mayo Bowl in Charlotte. I got to know, is Justin Sternad a fan of mayonnaise?
I'm actually not. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not.
Neither am I, brother. Neither am I, brother. But let me ask. You're in Florida, I think, right now. You spent years in North Carolina. You're going to be out west. What's the type of Southern cuisine you're going to miss the most from Winston-Salem?
I'm going to have to say a nice putter's meal with the boys after a game or on a weekend. A nice little putter's cheat meal, get the buffalo fries.
Ooh,
that's something I'm going to miss big time.
That's well said, man. That's very well played for a former Demon Deacon. It's crazy to say you're a former Demon Deacon, but we're excited to watch you. Number 40 for the Denver Broncos, fifth-round draft pick Justin Sternad. Best of luck for the rest of the offseason. We hope to catch up sometime before the season starts. Thanks for doing this, Justin.
Thank you, Josh. I appreciate it.
Go Deeks. You got it. Go Deeks. He's on Twitter, at JSGarbs. The former Deke linebacker, Justin Sternad, kind enough to be here. The Mayo Bowl isn't the only renaming in the news today. The Winston-Salem Downtown Stadium that was once BB&T Ballpark is officially today, drumroll Robert, Truist Stadium is now the home of the Winston-Salem Dash. I think some people get confused nationally when I try to explain to them why I enjoy college football more than the pros. Maybe it's because I grew up in a state where college sports is king. I grew up in North Carolina. That might also be the explanation for why I enjoy minor league baseball more than major league baseball. Or maybe this is the best way to communicate it, Robert. I am a fan of convenience. I'm not a fan, generally, of making a ton of effort to go somewhere just to relax. So if I have these two options, go to the beach or stay where you're at, staycation, and go to the pool, I'm generally going to choose the second option. Now, I usually go to the beach once or twice a year. We got like a condo in Myrtle Beach. I plan to go in the next couple of weeks, but I prefer the pool to the beach because You don't have to deal with sand, so it's cleaner. There's fewer people. It's less of a hassle. It's cheaper. It's more convenient to go to a pool than to go all the way to the beach. Same deal for minor league baseball. I love minor league ball because it's not really about the results, albeit you'd love to see the home team win. Going to Granger Stadium in Eastern North Carolina, going to Zebulon to watch the Mudcats, the Durham Bulls in Durham, and certainly here in the Triad with the Grasshoppers and the Dash. And I'm sure it's the same way with the Charlotte Knights, but I haven't been to a game in their stadium yet. Don't want to forget anybody, the tourist in Asheville, Kannapolis Intimidators. How could we forget about them, even though they had the name change as well? I just think going in and out, it's a lot easier. It's a lot cheaper for minor league baseball. So I think it's a more enjoyable experience where, hey, it doesn't have to be very expensive to go to a ball game. It doesn't have to be stressful with the result and being emotionally invested with who wins and who loses. It's just enjoying baseball and maybe a hot dog too. So I miss minor league ball. I miss minor league baseball just as much as I miss major league baseball being in the news, probably more, because I go to minor league games. I don't really go to major league games. One of these days, I hope, there's going to be minor league baseball. I doubt it's going to be in 2020, so we're probably going to have to wait till next year to go inside now Truist Stadium. I knew I was going to get it wrong. You got SunTrust merging with BB&T, and now they're Truist, so bound for some confusion to happen there. But it's Truist Stadium, the new home of the Winston-Salem Dash. I'll list off the top five quarterbacks that if I could have a league-wide redraft, I'd be taking to build around. That's next on The Drive.
We must talk.
Go ahead.
Talk.
Back to The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
Mac Brown met with the media for the first time since he and the football staff returned to campus. The basketball staff also recently returned to campus as well. Players have been coming through in cycles over the last few weeks since June the 8th, I believe, is when football players started coming in. And as far as we know, no positive tests. However, we were told today that we would not be informed when players tested positive of COVID via the HIPAA laws that exist. So, we don't know if there are any positive tests, but Mac says that things have been going well and they've been tested already a couple of times, tested a few times, and things are going well with Tar Heel football's summer program thus far. The Tar Heels, as we've discussed on this show, have done very well on the recruiting trail. Really good class coming in this year. Next season, thanks to the help of some 3- and 4-star commitments from the Triad, a couple from Glenn here in Kernersville, another from Clemens committing, I think 10 of the 16 players who have committed to this class that right now is ranked 5th in the country are from Western North Carolina. Mac Brown's been getting it done. And I think a significant reason why that is just overall growth in the state of North Carolina. Charlotte and Raleigh are two of the fastest growing cities in America. Anytime those lists come out, Charlotte and Raleigh are sure to be there. So I think when you have more people come through, there's a trickle-down effect to Winston-Salem, to Greensboro, High Point in the Triad, other pockets of the state too, and I think there's just more talent available. Most of the kids that Max recruited are from this state. So if the class is this good, I think it's because, one, Max doing a good job, but two, and maybe more importantly, there's just more talent to pick between that's close to campus. So I asked Mac about that, and I asked him about mayonnaise too, and this is how that sounded.
It's been well documented how well you guys have been doing recruiting in the state of North Carolina since you've returned, particularly in Western Carolina. But even in the East as well. How much has the growth of the city, Charlotte and Raleigh specifically, always appearing on the top 10 fastest growing cities in America, impacted, you think, the talent level that's in this state?
Josh, it's really impacted the talent level in the state, because the more people you have, the more opportunities you have to look at recruits. High school football coaches are doing a tremendous job in this state. We continue to want to elevate high school football in the state of North Carolina. But I think the biggest difference right now and when we were here before and now is the number of prospects. There were good players, a lot of good players in this state before, but now, well, there's prospects all over the place, and you can't take them all. And there's a lot of good players that will play against us that we can't take. But I'm really excited for the high school coaches in this state and the young student athletes in this state that are playing football, because there's some really good players, and it's bringing a lot of attention to our state. And our guys are killing it in recruiting. I like what they're doing. They've got a familiarity with the state. There's such an upside right now with our program and so much momentum. It's been a cool place to be for a year or so. So I really like what we're doing, and I like the kids we're recruiting too. They want to be here, and they're excited about being here, and they're making strong decisions, and they're good students, so I'm really excited about the future.
And secondly, I'm not sure if you saw this morning, but the Belk Bowl has been replaced as the Duke's Mayo Bowl now. You're a Southern guy, Mac. I got to know, are you a Mayo fan?
It's sad that I keep fighting my weight all the time. I'm a food fan, so yes, just about everything that's out there I like to eat.
That's well said. From Mac Brown. I've never felt more seen by a college football coach than Mac Brown saying, I'm just a big food fan, or a big fan of food. Gosh, how do I get those things backwards at times? Robert, we got CJ Johnson, who's going to join us in 10 minutes. He's the president of Winston-Salem Dash Baseball. They announced a new name for their downtown ballpark. It's no longer BB&T Ballpark. It is now Truist Stadium. So we'll talk to him about that and the state of minor league baseball. And in addition to that, I feel like this is a good opportunity as a segue before we get to CJ for you to ask me some baseball questions, because normally on Thursdays we have our Sharon with Darren baseball segment, but we did Darren yesterday. So I want to make sure people get their baseball fix during a time where we normally expect baseball. Tony Clark putting out a statement in the last few hours saying they've extended a 70-game schedule in response to the 60-game proposal that the owners had yesterday. There still is no agreement yet. We hope there will be one by Friday or Saturday. Baseball insiders are optimistic that that's going to be the case, but there's no way it's going to be more than 60 games is the ultimate feeling. But rather than talk about the bummer of where Major League Baseball is at the moment, how about, Robert, you just ask me some questions as we try to get you further ingrained in baseball?
Robert doesn't know diddly squat about baseball.
Strike one!
When Robert hears strikeout, he thinks all about his failed past relationships.
Strike two!
When Robert hears breaking ball, he winces.
Oh.
Gas? Get the point?
Strike three, you're out!
While everyone else is swinging for the fences, Robert is simply trying to get on base.
Swing! Batter, swing! Swing!
This is Baseball for Dummies.
All right, I want to start off hot, Josh. In trying to learn about baseball, I'm learning about their successes and also their failures. And I know why Pete Rose is not in the Hall of Fame for the Major League. I want to know your opinion. Should he be in the Hall of Fame?
Do you know why he's not in the Hall of Fame?
For betting on and against his team, correct?
Yeah, he always bet on his team. You could choose whether or not you want to believe that. But at first he said he didn't bet on baseball. And then he said he only bet on his team. That's never been contradicted. So if we're just assuming that's true, well, is the crime enough that he should be out of the sport completely? Probably not, but the Major League Baseball has given him ample opportunity to try and prove that he is sorry, that he realizes his mistake, and he's just never done it. In fact, he never even admitted he bet on sports for his team or against it until he put out a book in 2003 or 2004, and he just so happened to have that book come out the day of a Hall of Fame ceremony and sign copies right across the street from the Hall of Fame ceremony. Like, so he doesn't really seem very regretful or sorry. Faye Vincent, you can go back and read some of the things that he said at the time. I'm more upset that South Carolina native Shoeless Joe Jackson isn't in the Hall of Fame than I am Pete Rose. In fact, if the Pete Rose scandal didn't happen in the time that it did, 1989, I think Shoeless Joe, he's in the 80s. Like, Field of Dreams really made that push, but then you were in a spot where it's a gambling issue on his part in the 1919 World Series that apparently they threw, or reportedly they threw. He got banned from the sport, so you can't say that guy gets in right as you're banning Pete Rose for betting on baseball in more of a modern sense. Shoeless Joe should be in because even though he was one of the guys who accepted money, he hit over 300 in that World Series.
Okay. Doesn't he hold some kind of record, though? Like, is there a way you could separate him from his managerial mess up just as a player?
Nobody's had more hits in the history of baseball than Pete Rose.
Yeah, okay.
The Baseball Hall of Fame is a clown show because they view themselves as more than a museum. They are a museum, ultimately, but they are trying to hold moral ground, not letting in the all-time leading home run leader in Barry Bonds because of steroids, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, and Roger Clemens, and they're doing the same thing with Pete Rose when it comes to betting, but I think Pete Rose is different, again, because they've given him opportunities, and he's just squandered it.
Okay, that was very informational. Now something a little more fun. What's the best stadium food? I know as an Orioles fan, there's probably like Krabby Fries or something up there.
Krabby Fries are interesting. You can get those. Last time I was at Camden Yards, $7.50.
That's not bad.
Got Old Bay on it. Beer costs $8. Dodger dogs are really good, but slightly overrated on the West Coast. At the Orioles ballpark, I'm a fan of the SK dogs. All about it. SK hot dogs, Boog Pals barbecue in right field, also really good. So I'm a hot dog guy. When I go to sports, I get a hot dog. So if we're talking stadium food, it starts with that.
Awesome. And I feel like baseball is a very superstitious sport. Maybe I get that from Major League. Maybe I'm just making it up in my head.
Very superstitious.
Okay, so maybe you could tell me some of the little stitions, maybe not the superstitions, but some of the smaller ones.
Well, we talk about unwritten rules in baseball, like don't bunt if a guy has a perfect game, don't talk to a guy who's throwing a perfect game. Those are the ones that stick out to me the most in terms of superstitions. I think that some of the superstitions are a little ridiculous when it comes to baseball. Like guys who never wear stirrups or never would mess with different kinds of socks, and you're talking about underwear, Bull Durham, hey, I'm only winning when I have this underwear on, etc., etc.
I thought I remember there being a superstition about eating chicken in baseball.
Don't know that.
But I must be mistaken. And finally, I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about Bill James.
People pushed against Bill James for decades. He was all about stats and analytics before that was a thing. And then Billy Beane adopted it with the Oakland A's, and that's what the movie Moneyball was about.
So he's a general manager, not a player.
Bill James was not.
Okay.
Bill James was just a statistician. I think he might have been a teacher. But then he came up with this idea that some popularized, but baseball just flatly rejected until Billy Beane made it popular. He was offered a contract to become the GM of the Red Sox. He turned it down. Theo Epstein did the same thing that Billy Beane did, essentially, with just more resources, and they won the World Series in 2004, and he won the World Series with the Cubs in 2016. So everybody's now going analytics-based. Bill James was really the person who started that in American sports.
Cool deal. I feel way more informed about baseball every time we do this.
And I think we're going to continue being informed because the Winston-Salem Dash president, C.J. Johnson, he's going to join us to talk about the Dash's newly named ballpark, and the state of minor league baseball next on The Drive.
What are you talking about?
What's he talking about?
I'm talking about the one and only
Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
The president and general manager of the Winston-Salem Dash, C.J. Johnson, is kind enough to spend some time here on the day that they make a pretty big announcement earlier this morning. We knew something was probably going to happen when we saw that BB&T merged with SunTrust, which then turned their name to Truist, and with BB&T Ballpark being the name of the Dash's ballpark for the last decade or so. They have a new name now, and it is Truist Stadium. C.J. Johnson made that announcement earlier today. He's now here on Sports Hub Triad. Here's what I want to know, C.J. Truist Stadium, Truist Ballpark, Truist Field. How many did you guys go through? How many did you consider before arriving at Truist Stadium?
Well, thanks for having me on, Josh. I listen often and enjoy your show.
Thank you.
With the amount of names, I would encourage you and your listeners to Google names for facilities. It's not a real long list. And so once we got, you know, we wanted to differentiate ourselves with Atlanta being Truist Park was very similar, obviously, to ballpark, and Charlotte with Truist Field. We wanted something unique to Winston-Salem, unique to us, and so we did go through some different names. Truist, like the Polo Grounds is a more unique one, Truist Grounds. Truist Diamond seemed a little bit too similar to a jewelry store name, so we tossed that one aside, and ultimately we settled on Truist Stadium and have a great new logo, a great new brand.
Yeah, why don't any stadiums have grounds anymore? That seems to be a thing overseas, like in soccer. But yeah, someone needs to bring back grounds somewhere, someplace.
Somebody does. We decided that somebody would not be us.
Yeah, yeah. C.J. Johnson with us here. Looking at minor league baseball, one of the bigger things being discussed is how some of the minor leaguers are going to get paid. I think the way that players have been approaching this across Major League Baseball has been really neat to see. David Price saying that he was going to give a significant amount to players in the Dodgers system, even though he was just traded from the Red Sox to the Dodgers. We see a commitment from players saying they're going to give $1 million to be dispersed across minor leaguers. Because at one time, all these players were once playing in a place like Winston-Salem, playing in minor league baseball. So is it your expectation that all the minor leaguers you're responsible for are going to be paid at least through August?
Yes, all of our players are Chicago White Sox employees. So those decisions come from the Chicago White Sox. I know that they've made commitments at least, I believe it's through the end of July at this point, from the White Sox. It has been great to see those major league players step up, like you mentioned, as well. You know, baseball is unique as far as the developmental system that even superstars, even the Bryce Harpers of the world that were phenoms and recognized early as phenoms, still play in the minors coming up. So it's unique in that regard that all of these guys have experienced it, even if they had significant signing bonuses. They played in locker rooms with guys that were, you know, definitely living paycheck to paycheck and a small paycheck at that. So you know, I think the organizations and the major league players all realize that without a baseball season, those guys need some assistance.
I think it was maybe around a year ago, maybe even further than that, that you were concerned about a New York Times report and Major League Baseball looking at potentially shortening the amount of affiliations that a lot of teams have. And I mean, the Carolina League's exactly what these teams want because of the proximity, and the ballparks are just fantastic that you find, especially in the state of North Carolina, and Truist Stadium is no exception to that. So when you look at some of the proposals you're seeing now and some affiliations not as lucky as the Dash are, what is your ultimate big concern for minor league baseball as a whole moving forward?
It's tough with the contraction that will come into play in 2021. It's really settled on it's going to be 120 teams So basically four levels of baseball. We're currently at 162, obviously in all in a state of limbo right now as far as playing in 2020. But for 2021, their goal was to get to 120 teams. I've been in minor league baseball for two decades and clearly a lifelong baseball fan. So it's tough to know about some of those communities that have had baseball for a long time, that's going to go away. Chattanooga, I believe, is one that was on the list that's had minor league baseball for over 110 years. And
yeah.
So it's tough. You hope that this is still going to be a way to grow the game. I think that's everybody's goal. And so it seems hard to grow it by eliminating, but I think they're looking at it as a quality as much of a quantity with number of teams. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. You're correct that we're very fortunate being in the Carolina League and a great ballpark and a great market. So, we haven't been mentioned in that list, but still tough for me to see people in my industry that I know that are potentially on that list and communities that have known and loved baseball for a long time as well.
CJ Johnson, president and general manager of the Winston-Salem Dash with us here. I love this promotion that I saw earlier in the week. For free, starting on June the 27th, you can reserve the right to go to Truist Stadium and have a catch at 10 a.m., at 11 a.m. You just have to contact the Dash by calling them or emailing Ayala Acosta via her email, and in the afternoon as well at 5 and 6 o'clock. So around this time, you could be out there for an hour. 12 pairs will be out in the field at one time. You and a friend can go out and throw and have a catch. I want to know where this idea came from. If you saw it from somewhere else, or I'd like the picture you watched Field of Dreams, just got emotional and thought, hey, we need to do something.
Well, actually, I heard your interview with Larry Sorensen the other day, and you guys were talking about favorite baseball movies, and my favorite baseball movie is Field of Dreams, so that iconic scene at the end of that movie did factor into the idea process a little bit. It was actually minor league baseball had talked about different ideas teams were sharing that they were looking at doing in the unique times that we're in, and so we jumped on it and said, that's perfect. Right now, we're at a limitation from a state standpoint of only 25 guests within sports facilities. So we said, all right, that gives us 12 pairs at a time, and let's put some time slots and see if people are interested. So it all came together, and I think we'll probably have some friends out there. We've already had a lot of reservations, some that are just buddies that want to get out there and play catch, but some father sons, father daughters that want to get out there and play catch as well. So it should be a really good mix.
What other things have you considered to make use of Truist Stadium? Because I saw, I think it was a Twins minor league affiliate, putting their ballpark on Airbnb for anyone who wants to rent it out for $1,500.
Yeah, minor league baseball is known for being creative. And so there's 162 teams I mentioned. They're all kind of in that idea generating process right now of how do we use our facilities when we don't have baseball, and we do a lot in normal seasons outside of our baseball schedule, but so far we've done a character cruise through where we had Disney and Star Wars characters, local mascots that families could drive through and visit. We've got a couple that we're close to announcing that we're working on some fine tuning of details, but a lot of it, at least in the short term, will involve more of events where people drive through or very limited capacity to fit within that 25 guest parameters. But hopefully for everybody in the area, and the numbers continue to improve, and then from a state level, we are able to feel more comfortable of opening up venues at a larger level.
The Dash has stayed busy this offseason. At WS-Baseball, follow more of the updates that CJ was just talking about a moment ago, in addition to Truist Stadium being announced today, and also the promotion we just talked about. You got a new logo. I haven't been able to get to the team store and grab a new hat. Need to do that sometime. Love the new logo. And heck, yesterday was National Mascot Day, so we saw Bolt running around on the social media feed. But we need to get to the most important thing. Speaking of things being renamed, in Charlotte, it's the Belk Bowl, and it's been that for a while, but today it was renamed the Duke's Mayo Bowl. And it's been a really controversial, divisive topic on social media all day today. Do you like mayonnaise, CJ Johnson?
I've got to be honest. I do not like mayonnaise.
Yes!
I'm more of a French's mustard guy. I'm not sure if they approach them for naming rights, but I am more of a mustard guy. I tell you, what I'm curious is, you know, there's a lot of memorable photos where when teams clinch the Orange Bowl, they take photo with oranges, and Rose Bowl, they have roses. You know, will we see players taking photos with jars of Duke's mayonnaise when they clinch?
That's a great question. But you've just clinched the ultimate split today, where Mac Brown says he loves mayonnaise. We asked him about that. Justin Sternad, not a fan. I'm not a fan. You're not a fan. But Robert and Adam Gold are fans of mayonnaise. So it's just an even split. It's a divisive topic, but such is America at points. CJ Johnson, appreciate you spending the time. Like I said, I'm going to be out there. I miss being out at the ballpark. We miss having the games on the radio on Thursday nights. And we hope things get back to normal sometime soon. But great flexibility by you guys, it seems like, this season. Thanks for the time.
I appreciate it, Josh.
Got it. That is CJ Johnson, the president of Winston-Salem Dash Baseball, general manager as well. I'm serious, Robert. Sweet Lids. Really cool new logo that I was looking forward to seeing. I love minor league baseball caps. Ryan McGee got me onto that. He has, I think, hundreds of minor league caps. And I need to step up my game there. I really do. I will ask you, though, if you rented out, kind of like the Twins put on Airbnb, or a minor league team in the Twin system, put up their ballpark on Airbnb for $1,500, what would you do if you had the newest, truest stadium for the day? Like, if you paid $1,500, the stadium is yours for 24 hours.
I would show a movie marathon and charge people to come in, and that would be from like 11 a.m. to maybe like 5 or 5:30 p.m., and then I would rent out the whole baseball park to like a wrestling company, and then they could have a wrestling show, and then they pay me, and I'll end up getting paid way over $1,500.
There are rules against
that. Rule schmoles. Like, I paid to rent this building out,
like,
sir.
The Twins said, for example, you can have 10 buddies with you. So 11 people.
Oh, so now they're going to try to quantify how many people I can put in here? I paid you good money, $1,500.
Yeah.
I'm a regular person, not somebody who owns a stinking baseball stadium. If I pay you $1,500, I'll bring an elephant and let him poop on the third yard line. I do not care. Or on the third baseline. Yeah. I do not care. If I pay you money, it is mine. And if I give it back to you, that's
11
good.
11 people, $1,500. You're going to be talking about...
too much.
Around 125, 130 apiece.
Are all the bathrooms unlocked? Or do they just give us, oh, you can't poop here, you got to go somewhere else?
I don't know the answer to your question.
Okay, are the concessions open? If I'm paying $1,500, someone needs to be there for the hot dogs.
Well, no one's going to be there because you'd have to pay.
How am I getting beer? Are the bars open at this place?
I don't know the answer to your question.
Josh.
I'm just saying this is what they have. Like, this is what they said on the Airbnb post. Would this be helpful?
Okay.
Want to hit with your friends in our batting cage? Be our guest. Want to play catch on the field at 11:30 p.m.? Be our guest. Want to take batting practice while having a couple cold ones with the boys? Be our guest.
Is this sponsored by Beauty and the Beast? Like, are they about to break into Be Our Guest?
I don't know that song.
Be our guest. Be our guest. Put our service to the test. Tie your napkin around your neck, Shelly, and we provide the rest. Soup du jour.
All right, stop. Let's calm down.
Yeah.
I want you to get the music to that and give us just the first part of this song. Because, Robert, I'm surprised you know every word to this song, but I want instrumental. I want sound in the background. That's really good. I'm going to read the rest of this, if you don't mind now. Want to take your siblings in ping pong and video games in the clubhouse? Be our guest. Want to enjoy breakfast at home plate? Be our guest. So it seems like they're opening up the clubhouse. You got the field. You also have the scoreboard, so you can connect things to the scoreboard and play video games. You're just not going to have hired staff working concessions or anything of that sort. It probably is BYOB, bring your own beer in.
It is our greatest pleasure to serve you your dinner. Be our guest. Oh, be our guest. Put our service to the test. Tie your napkin round your neck, Shelley, and we provide the rest. Soup du jour, hot hors d'oeuvres. We only live to serve. Try the gray stuff. It's delicious. Don't believe me? Ask the dishes. They can sing. They can dance. Why, of course, we are in France. And the dinner here is never second best.
Great work.
It's my favorite Disney movie.
Beauty and the Beast is your favorite Disney movie.
I love it, dude. I can't get enough. The Emma Watson version actually blew me away. I usually don't like the Disney live.
I haven't seen that one.
Very good.
I love Emma Watson.
They redo all the songs. They throw some new songs in with some twists. It's great. And Emma Watson, like you said, what a beauty. What a talent.
Also stars in Perks of the Wild, Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Is that with where she has short hair? Is it?
I don't think she has short hair in that.
I'm thinking of a different movie then.
Same length that she had in Harry Potter,
I mean. I've had a crush on her probably since I was a little kid watching Sorcerer's Stone.
There you go. Getting Sorcerer's Stoned. Robert Walsh.
That's me.
Way back when. We have a really big show tomorrow. Tomorrow marks the 14th anniversary of Game 7. Stanley Cup Finals, the Hurricanes winning North Carolina's first and only major professional sports championship. And the guy who scored the empty net goal to solidify that win, Justin Williams, he's going to be our guest.
Now I just break into it again with the full orchestra.
Around 3:30 tomorrow. That's going to be exciting. And John Forslund's going to be with us as well tomorrow. We have a top 10 list, so we hope you'll be our guest. On a Friday Drive, Justin Sternab was with us today. If you missed that, find that on the Best of Podcast by searching The Drive with Josh Graham wherever you get your podcasts. Okay. Robert, what do you got in Ticket to the House today?
Don't know where to go. Follow me.
It's next on The Drive.